I'm Anna Horford, and you're listening to the Celtics Life podcast.
It is officially the start of the offseason for the Boston Celtics after being knocked out of the playoffs by LeBron James, which means offseason podcasts.
Woo!
Today we'll be talking about what we've got going on between the last two teams in the playoffs, most notably J.R. Smith, and what Celtics fans should be looking forward to over the next few months.
And guys, as far as from us, like over the next couple months, we'll probably be on like a summer schedule. I mean, we'll probably be weekly up until the draft and beginning of free agency, but be prepared. You know, we might take a little time off. They'll be a little all over the place. We're going to try and get some guests on and stuff. So, and then once we get camp fired up, maybe the end of September, we'll be back full steam ahead. But just so you know, that's probably the summer deal.
And especially with kind of this different schedule and all the stuff going on, we live for your feedback. That'll help us get better. And we're going to be playing around with content and with all of our stuff throughout the summer. So we'd really appreciate it if you subscribe and rate us 5 stars and also leave us reviews and comments on our Celtics Life articles or on Twitter with the hashtag CLPod. As always, thank you for listening. Let's jump into the playoffs right now. We took 7 games to LeBron James and also the Cleveland Cavaliers, if you want to include that. We all were kind of in a lot of pain near the end of game 7, in part because it was kind of cruel in that it felt like we totally could have pulled it off.
Yeah, I mean, we wanted to jump in, right, pod, like right after, and I just couldn't do it. We took a whole week off here.
Yeah.
Just to kind of recalibrate. It definitely felt like a game that got away.
It was a lot of pieces that kind of just fell apart near the end. And most notably, I think 3-point shooting was just awful.
Abysmal.
For the Celtics, especially in the latter half of the third quarter on.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the most catastrophic in that we were tied and we were sticking with them. I think we were ahead at some point, and then we just kept pulling threes.
Yeah.
Just constant. You know, dribbling outside the arc just to take a three when there was basically an open lane to the basket. And I know that like that's a big shot. It can really swing a game if you're hitting threes. But if you're not hitting them, it can also swing a game just the opposite direction.
And yeah, I mean, I remember we were in the bonus with like 10 minutes to go in the game. And one of my buddies who I was watching the game with was like, oh, well, now we're in the bonus. You know, we're just going to keep chucking up threes and totally blow this. And, you know, I laughed it off at the time. And then it was just like, you know, like 4 minutes later. And I'm like, oh my God, that's exactly what we're doing here. Like,
do you think that I countered the argument of that the 76ers were losing because they were too young and that they just couldn't play in the playoffs because they were too young. But do you think that the youth is part of what ultimately cost the Celtics in this series? Is it different from the Sixers? At least their argument?
I don't know. I guess that's a really good question. The way I saw it, I mean, the series kind of unfolded like, you know, everybody took care of their business at home. And then it came to game 7, and I thought we were in a good place. I remember, I mean, before that, go back, wasn't any pot. I said I thought it would be 7 games, and I was like, I thought we could take care of business in that game at home. And I think that I don't know that it was like the moment was too big. I mean, we saw how big Jason Tatum was in that game.
He dunked on LeBron James.
Yeah, like unbelievable. And I thought that was like the momentum shifter right there, you know? And talk about the youth. I mean, he's the youngest guy leading the charge there at the end. I think we just got some bad games from key contributors, you know? Terry had a really bad game 7.
Mm-hmm.
And after, you know, he had a great game 6, and so did Jalen. So for those guys, I don't think it was like the moment was too big. It was just, I just think it was just a bad shooting night, really.
Yeah. And even then, we were in it until the final couple minutes. Like, it was a close game until the final couple minutes. And then the Cavs, well, LeBron started to run away with it.
Yeah.
But no, I go back and forth on that because initially I found myself making that argument and I was saying, I think that we're really having trouble on the road and we're losing so much on the road because we're just so young and we're just a lot more rattled in these road games. We're in the arenas that are just so much more energetic than they are during the regular season. But then I also looked back to when I was talking about the Sixers and how I argued that youth actually isn't really a very good argument for them, because I almost was like, well, we're more young than they are, so like therefore they can't be having trouble because of youth. But now I'm saying that, well, now we are being hit by, like, I don't know, I'm going back on myself and it's kind of bothering me. But I question whether that's something that's actually an issue or not. And it was a night and day difference. I mean,
it was very evident.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's partially why I was so convinced for a little while before I took that step back and looked at it from a more objective point of view. But, you know, I still question it, because there's got to be some explanation for why we were so bad, historically bad, on the road during the playoffs, especially for a team that was extremely good on the road during a regular season.
I was just going to say, we had one of the better records in the league on the road, and like, maybe it was just a case of like the, you know, everything gets amped up obviously to another level, and you know, maybe the pressure did get to some of the younger guys.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, now we've got Cleveland continuing the whole streak of being undefeated on the road, getting absolutely shellacked by the Golden State Warriors and their lineup of death, and also with some assistance from J.R. Smith. If you didn't see it, actually, you should break this down, man. You could break down J.R. Smith's move.
The
either or, man. Take both.
I can't imagine not knowing the score. I'm just thinking from someone playing, like, you know, sports as a kid, and, you know, some high school sports, and like, I just can't even fathom not knowing the situation when you're in the finals. I mean, you have a chance to knock off. Was it the free throws that confused him? I mean, here he is thinking to get into the line. He must have thought they were tied, obviously.
Yeah, I mean, that was his argument, right? In the, like, one time
he saw the first free throw go in, and I don't know. And George Hill gets totally taken off the hook here for missing that second free throw, because that's what they would be talking about.
Yeah.
If it wasn't for J.R. Smith. Draymond Green had the great recap of this after the game, because he was saying, you know, when Smith takes down the rebound and then takes off, he thought he was looking for LeBron. So, you know, he immediately, yeah, that's what I would have done if it was me. And sure enough, you know, JR runs out there and just, I mean, just he almost runs by LeBron, almost runs across half court. I mean, I don't know what that, it's just crazy.
Yeah.
I mean, and then he did pass it to LeBron, right? And then LeBron humped it to the corner, right? To George Hill, who took another shot.
I thought he whipped it to George Hill. Who was,
oh, okay, that's right. He looked to pass it to LeBron, but then LeBron pointed, and then he fired it over in the corner to a pretty open George Hill, but it was too late anyways.
I don't think it was even fired. I think he just tossed it that direction.
Well, like, he figured
he was going to be fouled. Yeah, I think he thought he was going to be fouled because he thought they had the lead or something. And then George Hill immediately, like, went up as quickly as he could with the shot.
It was already too late.
And that's when JR realized, like, oh, I did something bad.
Mm-hmm. Have you seen the video on Twitter of the 2 minutes that, like, took place right after that?
No.
Oh, God. So I will hashtag this for you guys listening, and I'll tweet it out. So basically, they have the uninterrupted camera footage of what happened, like, when they went to commercial after that.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's from that meme where, like, LeBron's hands are out that everyone keeps making the funny memes out of, you know, where he's got his two hands outstretched. It picks up right from there. And, like, JR, like, walks over to him. They say they have, like, a little exchange. LeBron kind of huffs and puffs and takes off for the bench. JR, like, is coming back towards the bench, head down. And, like, everyone's, like, dapping him up on the way back, like Kyle Korver and different guys. Oh, hit up, man, you know, whatever.
Happens to everybody.
So they sit down. They sit on the bench. LeBron is sitting there defeated, right? Like, just like, looking. J.R. Smith's got his head slumped forward. And then LeBron starts looking up at the Jumbotron, right? And, you know, he's looking at it for a minute. And then Ty Lue comes walking over, and he realizes that they had a timeout, and he says to Ty Lue, "We had a timeout?" And Ty Lue, you can only see the back of his head, but he responds, and he says, "Why did you call timeout?" And like, I think it was Mixtape from Barstool that tweeted this out, and he said, like, breaks down, like, At 1:31, LeBron realizes they had a timeout. At 1:41, LeBron has already decided to leave the Cavs because it's the way his head, like, just totally, just, he just totally, like, it's the most defeated look I've ever seen on anybody.
Would you have called a timeout if you were the coach?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, what is he thinking?
Because you don't think that your player is that bad.
Yeah, but not
that an NBA player would do that.
But we've seen Brad Stevens call timeout when he thought Marcus Morris was about to take a shot that he didn't want him to take in split second time. So yes, when J.R. Smith runs out and looks confused and there's still 3 seconds on the clock, you call timeout right there.
But Brad Stevens is noted for doing that. Brad Stevens, like, there are commentators who are like, he's a guy who will totally, like, that's something that it has to be told to fans. Because he's prone to do that. There's a reason he's one of the very few that have the confidence in their coaching ability and just the wherewithal to understand that they need to fix what they're seeing in front of them. Whereas I think the vast majority of coaches, let things kind of unravel because they expect that these are the best players in the world.
Right.
And as such have the best ability. But I think Tyronn Lue easily falls into that side, and we saw that on their Friday night.
Okay,
but you know, I don't think that most coaches would have called the timeout.
Well,
there
I agree with you there. While I do agree with you there, it's still, there was enough time there. It's not like it was bang bang. He took the rebound down there, and there was what, 5.5 seconds left, I think, from the shot.
No, there were only three. There were
no,
only three.
There was more than that.
No, from the rebounds.
Alright, I don't believe you, but even still, I don't know. If your player comes running out like that, and it's J.R. Smith, like, I don't know.
If he hadn't been running towards LeBron.
Okay, I guess. I guess. I mean,
I keep making you concede on these things, man. You keep getting closer and closer to my side.
Yeah. I don't know. I just don't. I still think it's a mistake. I just think that in that moment, when you see your players in a panic, I mean, all you need is like 1 second to get, you know, at least a decent shot off. And you have LeBron, he can shoot over pretty much anybody, right? So it's like, I don't know. I don't know. I don't see how you don't call timeout there. And maybe that's nitpicking too much, but I think that's crazy. But you have to watch this video, though, because to see the look on LeBron's face, it's just absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah, no, you absolutely have to tweet that out. But
just broken. A broken man sitting there on the bench. And then, like Tristan Thompson comes over and he's, like, patting him on the head as he's slumped forward just in, like, what have I been left with here?
Yeah. There was a post on Reddit that was in the comments section of a Reddit post that was talking about how the Warriors actually have 5 All-Stars and one is J.R. Smith. And it kept breaking down all the All-Stars that they have because they're like, well, they also have Kevin Durant's mom, who's the real MVP. I loved the thread. I was laughing for a little while about it. But JR has helped the Warriors win game one. Actually, he was probably single-handedly responsible for the Warriors.
They were chanting MVP for him last night at
Oracle. They were. I loved that. It was so savage.
And somebody tweeted out, too, if only these Golden State fans had this kind of creativity when they were cheering for the Lakers 5 years ago.
So yeah, that's a fun storyline. I like what's going on there. The Cavs, do you think they get swept?
I mean, I didn't think so until that happened. I mean, I assumed they didn't really fold last night. I mean, they played a pretty good game.
Until the end,
I mean, they were down 10 most of the game, within like striking distance. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And every time they'd kind of claw back in, the Warriors would shoot back.
Well, and that's what happens with the Warriors. You can't let them be up 10 because you'll never catch up. Because even if you hit a couple shots in a row, then bang three, and then you're down by even more than you were down. It's like they're just a machine.
Yeah.
So that's. I think the Cavs would probably pull one out in Cleveland, but at this point, that might not even happen. LeBron, like, had they won that game one, they could have made a series out of this, you know? Mm-hmm. And I think that ship is most definitely sailed.
let's move back to the Celtics. What do you think the priority of Danny Ainge and the Celtics front office should be this summer?
So keeping the band together and adding minor pieces, right? Mm-hmm. Adding, filling out. I mean, we're getting two All-Stars back, right? So we're instantly going to have the best offseason of any team, right? Unless the Lakers somehow pull off like LeBron and Paul George or something, right?
True.
Like no one's getting two players of that caliber back in their lineup. So that we're in the Eastern Conference Finals. Those two guys, even one of those two guys, puts us in the finals this year, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's just keeping the guys around him that play well in the system. You know, I think Marcus Smart, if you don't keep him, I think you're looking at a completely different identity defensively.
Yes.
Like you're missing a huge, huge piece. And there's really not a guy to like replace that.
I would agree with even just the first part of that you just lose the identity of not even just the defense, but of the team. He embodies the Celtics.
Longest tenured member.
Yeah, I mean, he makes the Celtics what they are.
Mm-hmm.
And I would guess that he has a big role in the locker room among players. And just, it's like who's up next mentality in Boston. And it's just, you know, every guy is a massive contributor. And Smart is one of the most tested and the most proven of defensive players, but just like, you know, having gone through the ups and downs with the Celtics since he's been drafted.
Mm-hmm.
So, no, I think he's a huge part of keeping this locker room, you know, what it is. One of the most fun teams that we've had in a long time. I think that Smart is a big part of that.
And so we don't know how much Smart's going to make, right? So he's restricted free agent, so technically they can match any number.
Mm-hmm.
Wick has been on the record saying they're willing to go into the tax to keep this team together.
Yep.
I would assume that means Marcus. I don't know if it's in Wick's best interest to say that because then we're looking at the, you know, whatever number he's going to have to pay out. Being so upfront with that, even if he does intend to do that.
I think so. Marcus did say, I don't think it was immediately after game 7, but he did say, I think I'm worth 14 to 16. I think somewhere in that window.
Yeah, it was the day after that horrible game.
Yeah, yeah. So everything was kind of a blur.
Bad optics there by Smart. Had he waited a couple of days, it wouldn't have seemed so bad. But after coming off that not so great performance in Game 7, and that wasn't just him; that was a handful of guys. But
if he ever figures out his offense, dude is 20 plus. Dude,
I don't think that's ever going to happen though. I mean, we're at this point and, you know,
we found a way to make it work where we found a really, really good role for him as just a defensive guy. I mean, he still pulls the Marcus Smart where he goes and he makes or tries to make plays offensively and it just doesn't usually pan out, but then he has the games where he's randomly hot out of nowhere.
And it's like, we can't possibly lose those games because it's just such a shot in the arm.
Yeah. So, no, I think that he's, I would agree. He's like 12 to 16. I'd put his lower mark closer to 12 than 14. But I think that the Celtics were probably willing to pay 10 to 12. And, you know, it's not extremely unreasonable to give him an extra 3 or 4 million. And if Wick is serious about willing to spend to keep this core together, I think Smart is the main. Like I figured that was kind of like, you know, like fan theories. They're like, oh, R plus L equals J confirmed. I was like, oh, Marcus Smart coming back confirmed. That's
yeah. I bet, no, you're right. You're right though. That's exactly the way I read it too. So, and it's going to be like there's also, you know, obviously they could always sign him for 2 years. It doesn't have to necessarily be like a 4 year deal.
Yeah, because that also is the question of like how long is this window? I mean, we have a unique position of having a lot of young guys, but you know, Marcus Smart, if we give him a 4 year deal, maybe the tail end of that doesn't look nearly as good as it did, you know, today or starting next year or something. So it's tough, especially with his, you know, propensity to break himself intentionally. Not on the court, just in general. So
right, Right.
Yeah. You know, there's some a little bit of risk there, but I think the Celtics are the most poised and ready to take on Marcus Smart for a longer period of time.
Mm-hmm. Agreed.
Moving to the draft then. Well, I guess any other free agents? Do you want Baines back?
I think he fills an important role. I think he's obviously a little more expendable. There's other guys you could replace that do similar things to Bane. But at the same time, you know, if you want to hit the ground running next year, the guy that's already plugged in and knows what he's doing for this team, you know, he's probably the best option, right? At a guy at his price range.
Is he within our price range? Even if with
well, what is the number? I don't know.
I think he'd want more than a mid-level.
But do you think he's going to get that from anybody else? Because I don't really.
He'll fit more than a mid-level exception. I think that he would fit better. I mean, I don't know. I want to say he'd fit better, but he's got teams that could want his services, and they have the money to spend more than the Celtics.
Okay.
So I think that he absolutely could get the money. It's just going to a situation that may not be as appealing.
Mm-hmm.
And also, I think it's, you know, I mean, but there are teams that could totally use him, and because he's a good player, you know, he's really good defensively. You know,
he fills a great role for us, you know, but mm-hmm. I think he's obviously, to me, a little more expendable, a lot more expendable. I mean, he's replaceable. You know, there's other guys. Kyle Quinn comes to mind, something like that. I'm sure that they could put in that role and do a lot of the same things. I particularly like Baines and the way that he fit in, so I would prefer that they stick with him.
But also, I mean, he's going to see less minutes. I mean, you and I were breaking down what the starting rotation might look like, and it, you know, very likely could be Kyrie, Brown, Tatum, Hayward, Horford.
Yeah. I mean, if that's not the starting lineup, I think that's the lineup that's going to play, you know, all those guys are going to play like 30 minutes a night.
Ideally, yeah.
You know, so, or close.
You know, that's probably a conversation the front office will have with Aaron. You know, is that a role that you're willing to take? Do you want that? And as such, do you want less money to do it?
Caveats there, yeah.
Yeah. Basically, do you want everything less just to stay with, you know, just to be here?
Yeah. Just for a run at a title next year.
Yeah, which I think that this is
certainly in the plans next year.
Yeah, because, I mean, unless the Lakers become, you know, what you just said of like Paul George and LeBron,
mm-hmm.
I doubt after that they'd have the money for him, but if they did, that might be the only other better situation.
Yeah, I mean, even LeBron on Philly, I know everyone, that's a popular thing, but does LeBron on Philly really better than that team? Like, I don't know that Philly, he would have to bring some other pieces.
Which they can't afford. Like,
or they'd have to keep a J.J. Redick, a guy they played $20 million this year.
Which they can't afford.
Right. So it's, you know, they don't have enough shooters on that team to complement him the way that, you know, I think they should. I don't know that him and Ben Simmons is a great coexist on the floor, two guys that need to dominate the ball, and one of them can't shoot. So,
one and a half of them can't shoot. It's like, you got LeBron, who is at best slightly consistent from three. I mean, obviously, yeah. his mid range game is unrivaled. He's like Kobe mid range. Yeah. I mean, he's just heat. Yeah. And especially the series where he was just destroying Terry Rozier or Baines, mm-hmm. or, you know, just. Even with the fadeaways, which you and I were like, we'll settle for those shots. He was still hitting like 45% of them, you know, still ridiculously good. So now, yeah, I mean, I agree. The Sixers is not a good, like, he'll destroy that team going there unless he's willing to take a pay cut in order to build an actual team.
Right.
Which, knowing LeBron, he's not. But,
and I mean, he shouldn't have to, you know,
yeah.
Like, that's what we're talking about going to that team. Obviously, you grow with those guys, and there's some good players on that team. I just don't think that him and Ben Simmons on the floor makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, but I would like Baines. I think that his best case scenario is with the Celtics. Problem is, he probably has to take less money to do it. But, mm-hmm. you know, I mean, he seemingly loves the locker room. He loves the franchise. He loves the city and the team.
Food in Boston.
Yeah.
A lot of on Twitter.
Yeah, and he's... you know, he fits the MO. He fits the city. He's like that really gritty dude who, he embodies what the Celtics are. Same way as Smart. You know, they both have that personality. And I think Celtics fans really like him. I think he really likes Celtics fans, and he got along really well here. It was a great fit. I would like to see him stay, but again, everything is less. You know, less money, less time, and you know, a chance at a ring. I think that would, if we get Baines, there's no need for Monroe with Hayward coming back. We'll play smaller, but I don't think there's a need for Monroe.
Right.
And I don't think we can afford him.
Yeah, and I don't think that he's probably going to want to look for a team. I mean, he's heading into years where he's probably got like one good long-term contract left in him. So he's going to want to sign, even if he signs a one-year deal somewhere, he's going to be looking to sign a longer deal. So he's going to want to be some exposure. He's going to want to play.
Yeah, well, he tried to do that with Phoenix, right? And they just didn't.
Right, but I mean, but that is Phoenix. I mean, you know, I mean, I think his best bet is to get on a playoff team or borderline playoff team, you know, not a bottom feeder like that. And
Charlotte.
Yeah, something like that, where he could potentially, you know, potentially be the piece to put them into the playoffs, right?
Yeah.
And play a lot.
Yeah. Any other guys?
He's 28 now, so I mean, you know.
Yeah, he's got, I would agree, one more long-term deal.
Yeah.
Unless he kills it in that deal. Maybe he, like, becomes an all-star.
Yeah.
Somehow.
Yeah. Now, Larkin played pretty well for what he was, you know, third-string point guard. I don't think it really matters. I think they could plug that in with somebody else. But having a guy that was experienced like that, he had some good games. He wasn't great towards the end of the year, but, you know, I mean, for what he is, he could end up back here too.
Controversial thought. If Shane Larkin hadn't gotten hurt, do you think he could have won us game 7?
No.
Terry Rozier was not shooting. Terry Rozier was not
shooting. I know, but like, would Larkin really be out there launching shit up?
I don't know if so. Launching, but he just makes the buckets.
I don't know about launching, just hit mix in the make, man.
It's a different game if we just make baskets, you know? It's like just, and his energy and his explosiveness.
Yeah, I mean, he could have created some stuff going to the basket too.
Yeah.
Which was non-existent. But I still feel like Brad probably would have just left Terry out there, though. Don't you think that as well as he's played this playoffs, like he would have just rode out with Terry either way? A lot of those shots that Terry was taking, and it wasn't just him, it was other guys too. Like we had like how many, I counted like 4 or 5 threes that rattled out, you know,
yeah,
that were like halfway down and just popped out. At least 2 or 3 of those from him. So I don't necessarily think the guys were that far off. Just a, you know, shitty night.
No, but that confidence, you know, you start seeing the ball hit the bottom of the net, and then you start feeling a little better, and then those shots start sinking. Yeah. And
well, I think Brad was hoping that one of them was going to go in, and that was going to unleash.
Yeah,
Terry is unleashed.
I'm just bringing up the possibility that Shane Larkin could have brought us to a championship. Okay,
I'm not so sure about that, but it's an interesting theory.
It is very definitely a theory. Big theory. And anybody else, so no renewal on Larkin, no attempt to bring him back.
I mean, I mean, if they'll sign him for a vet man, maybe if he is what he is, so they know what he can do. I guess it's better than the unknown in some situations, but I mean, I don't think it's all that important that he's the guy.
No, at that point, he's just taking up a roster spot, I think.
Yeah, and they're going to need a backup point guard, so whether they think one of those D-League guys can fill in that role, I don't think that's going to be the case when we're talking about a finals run. So, yeah, I don't think so.
Cool. Well, draft, we have been in the talks for trading up. I guess not talks, mm-hmm. but I've seen stuff about the Celtics being poised to trade up for actually a high lottery pick, right? Where people were targeting or saying that Ainge wants like Mo Bamba, which is an awesome name.
Yes.
I love that guy. do you even see any possibility of that being likely or necessarily worthwhile?
I don't understand. I mean, I'm not so sure they'd be able to move up into the, what would we be looking at here, you know?
That'd be top obviously. 5, probably.
So we're talking top 5. This is Dallas, right?
Yeah, Dallas is 5, yeah.
So you know, Terry Rozier is not really going to be appealing to them since they have a point guard, right? So it's not like you can package him in Sacramento and another first or something. I don't know. I think it's kind of a stretch, and they're not going to be trading Jason Tatum or Jaylen Brown for to move into the top five for a guy that might be as good, about as good as them, right?
Yeah.
You already know what you're way.
Yeah, and it's not.
Yeah, it doesn't really make any sense to me, and I don't see how else they'd be able to acquire that kind of positioning.
Yeah, it would be a lot of stuff. I mean, it could be future picks or something. You know, Ainge would be able to pull.
Yeah, I mean, we've got that Clips pick next year, right?
Lakers, Sacramento. Yeah.
Our firsts are all at the end of going to, you know, you figure our next first for the next 10 years, hopefully, are at the end of the first round. So, not exactly all that appealing to teams, I would imagine.
Yeah. That's the cost of being good, is that you have to find gold in the late rounds. And that's just kind of how it goes. Right.
Which happens. I mean, it happens. Ainge hasn't necessarily been so great in that department. He's nailed all his top picks, anything like his top 10 picks, but, you know, he's had a lot of busts up there, 20-plus.
Trying to think of... There was someone who was legit in the mid-late 20s. RJ Hunter was solid. You know, actually, I liked RJ. He just never got...
Toiling away in the D-League now, though, so I wouldn't count that as a nail.
Yeah, he just never got the time. I'm trying to think of...
No, maybe he will this year. He's in Chicago, I believe.
He was, yeah. Jordan Mickey was a stud second round.
Stud stallion.
Yep. A god. He's unreal. Best player ever picked second round. Goes Jordan Mickey, then Isaiah Thomas.
Mm-hmm.
All right, cool. So draft, nothing crazy there. We're going to have a lot of more draft stuff as we get closer to end of June. And, you know, we actually get talking about those. Probably once the playoffs are over, we'll get more into draft coverage. Final kind of off-season moves would be extensions and trades. Terry has one more year left. Kyrie has one more year left, and Marcus Morris has one more year left. Deadline is like late July, I think.
Right. Yeah. It's after draft, and is it before free agency?
No. It's after. It's after free agency. Yeah. I mean, normally they get it settled before, so that they know what money they have.
My guess is. Extending Irving's probably top of the list for obvious reasons. I don't know that they'll do that or if he'd even be willing to do that. It seems like he would. It seems like he had a fun year here. And seeing what they have, I think, you know, and especially given his injury history, he'd probably, coming off in the knee ailment, if I'm him, I want to check into my next long-term deal, wouldn't you?
Yes, but also if I'm the Celtics, I'd be reluctant to do so.
Really? So you wouldn't lock up Kyrie?
No, because of those injuries, man. I mean, he's been, you know, he came in with, I remember when we picked him up, when we traded for him, someone posted like just a picture of just pointing arrows to every single one of his injuries. And we're talking about how he's injury prone. And I don't completely agree with that, but yeah, you know, we lost him when we needed him most. Alongside Gordon Hayward, alongside all the other people, Daniel Tice. Also, there's a big guy why Baines may not be needed. Daniel Tice.
That's very, very true.
But yeah, on with that. I'm not saying I don't want him to stay on the Celtics. I'm saying that, you know, maybe I wait.
You would play wait and see and wait till after.
Yeah, because if he really wants to stay, it doesn't matter if he's extended versus if he's actually on the market. You know, I mean.
Well, if he really wants to stay, but at the same time, he's going to be an unrestricted free agent. Yeah, I don't know. You're kind of, I don't know. I'm going forward with, I want that core intact, knowing that. I wouldn't want to mess around with that.
I'd want to see what his knee looks like. Maybe we'll know by July before the deadline.
I want some photos, you know, I want to see some dance moves. I want to see what going on in the knee.
Plus, I mean, he's making just a bad movie, and that hurts his value.
You know, I'll tell you, that movie looks so bad. I'm sorry, Kyrie, but
that hurts his value.
The Uncle Drew was great. The commercials were awesome. The Don't Reach Youngblood. I love that stuff. And I was cautiously optimistic when I heard that they were going to be doing that. And then I saw the trailer. And,
yeah, it's not good. Terry Rozier, extend him.
I don't think that they will, only because the price tag there is probably going to be pretty high.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't think you're going to tie up that kind of money in him and Marcus, I guess. You know, this is me saying hopefully we're keeping Marcus Smart. So I don't know that they would. I don't know. And I don't know that he would be willing to sign an extension knowing that, you know, based on what he did in the playoffs and at the end of the year this year, it was a pretty good audition for a lot of teams. I mean, there's probably a lot of teams out there that would be interested in him being one of their starting guards.
Yeah, he's my one response to that would be, I think he's a guy who thinks he can always do better. Mm-hmm. But do you think that's like peak Terry Rozier? Do you think that's like his cap of what we saw? Of like, you know, a solid starting guard can definitely win you some games. But, you know, he's not an all-star.
Not like, yeah, I mean.
I think that fits him for me. Yeah. I think that was his peak. Mm-hmm. But whether he admits that.
Yeah.
And is willing to say, this is the best that I'm going to be. I should cash in now versus have a worse year next year.
Okay.
And not have as much value going into the market.
Yeah, I mean, I don't see Terry becoming like a 40-point game store. You know what I mean? Like a guy that's going to drop 40.
Yeah, he's not.
So like, you know, he could average 20 points. I don't see that. I don't think that's out of the question if he was on a team where he was one of the guys, right? But I don't see him being like that dominant scorer and he's not, you know, he's like Kyrie in many ways, he's not going to put up 10 assists, right? He plays a very similar game to him. He's just not quite as electric as Kyrie offensively.
I think he's a better rebounder.
Yeah, he's a better rebounder. He's a better defender too. But it, you know, that doesn't make up the difference from being one of like the top three scorers in the NBA.
Yeah. Marcus Morris, do you extend him?
Probably not. I think you play wait and see with that. I think you keep Morris. I think he plays a good role. You know, he's in your top eight players, right? So he's in the rotation. He plays minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he does a lot of things well. Stretches the floor too. But I don't know that I don't like the idea of extending role players when you're going to be so cap strong, right? Some of the younger guys like Terry, you can make a case for because maybe he will even grow to be even better, and you're cashing in, you know, at somewhat less than what his potential value is. But with somebody like Morris, I'm not so sure.
Cool. Well, we'll have obviously tons of more stuff on this as we get closer to those days. Yeah, free agency started July, draft is end of June. Extension stuff, whenever it happens in July, we'll find that out before we record those podcasts, and we'll have that information as we get closer to that. Let's talk about the most interesting thing in the NBA right now, which is the ridiculous Twitter explosion storyline thing that was broken on The Ringer. That is just what the hell is going on,
Brian the Burner Colangelo?
What is happening in Philly? What?
Total wild move. And it's like the favorite part about it is like, this is like, we're seeing like LeBron's like, all right, he's definitely leaving Cleveland, right? I mean, we've kind of all already known that. So what better way to have your franchise in turmoil than your GM, like just total like nut job conspiracy shit pops out. And like, what couldn't have been worse timing? I guess if it was a little closer to free agency, it could have been worse, but.
Yeah, this happens like on June 28th. It's like 2 days left, and suddenly LeBron goes to an office with him. He goes, don't worry about it. You know, because at least right this way, he'll be gone.
Yeah, right before his decision 2.0 comes out, and you know, you can just eliminate them from. That's just nuts. And so how much of this have you been reading into, the conspiracy theories and whatnot?
I haven't. I was doing, you know, I read the first article on The Ringer, which broke down that he had burner accounts, or well, at least it's very clear that it's likely Brian Colangelo, who was basically using five different burner Twitter accounts to talk about his team in ways that he probably shouldn't have as a GM, whether it's talking about Jahlil Okafor's health or, you know, all of his players' ability to actually play basketball. Yeah, you know, it's just like just trashing his own players, things like that. Not very cool from a GM. And so I read that and I was amused. The first time I read it, it was like 4 a.m, so I was tired, so I didn't understand it. I reread it after you guys were talking about it. So that's basically it. I've seen a couple things that you guys have been talking about with, like, that it might be his wife or that.
Yeah, so that's where a lot of people are pointing the finger now, at least. And I think while some of the tweets certainly sound like it could, you know, like it sounds like that's a possibility. Most of this stuff sounds like it's coming right from the source. I mean, just the way it just doesn't sound like somebody's wife tweeting most of these things. I spent a better part of an afternoon last week going through these tweets, and it's wild stuff. The wildest thing too is that the counts are still up there, and you can still go through them and read them because I keep seeing things pop up. At least most of them are. I don't know about all of them. And people just keep retweeting stuff like from whatever. So I understand that Philadelphia has to do like a investigation or whatever. You can't like unjustly fire somebody. But how are we sitting here almost a week later and he is still the like Sixers? He's the president, right?
Yeah. I mean, GM.
Whatever.
Like,
he's
colloquially. Yeah. He's like he's top of
the still running the show over there. Yeah. He's not been fired yet. And I was reading some Philly blogs this morning about they need to cut ties with Brian Colangelo yesterday.
Yeah. Well,
what craziness.
Maybe, I think maybe they're, if it's his wife and he's, maybe that's his cover up and he said it's his wife. So they're in the works of divorce papers. You know, that's the answer.
Even if it's his wife, you still have
fire Brian Colangelo's wife.
It doesn't make a difference. He still has to go.
I agree. I just think it's really amusing, and I like kind of poking the fire. I think it's a lot of fun. I have a friend who's a huge, huge Sixers fan, and I'm just having tons of fun with it.
It's awesome. And here's the thing too. Now here's one bright side for Philly fans, right? Sam Hinkie's become like the martyr that died for the process, right? He got fired because, you know, even though he acquired all those great players from his tanking. What if he gets to come back and be the Philly GM after all this is said and done? I think this is the best way for the organization to save face because Philly fans loved Hinkie for putting them in the position that they're in now. And, you know, they were bad for so many years and like they all kind of, he died for their sins, you know? And, yeah. And that would be the best PR possibility for the Sixers to bring back Sam Hinkie after all this. Mm-hmm. I know Justin's been saying David Griffin. Maybe that's how you get LeBron. I don't know that Griffin and LeBron were necessarily all that tight. I know he stood up for him when he got fired, but at the same time, I don't quite think that these guys were like best buds or something like that. Like I don't think that's
Griffin. Griffin is the only GM responsible for a championship in Cleveland.
That's true.
You know, it's not going to happen with this lineup. That was just. Created a trade deadline.
Yeah. Well, don't forget Jordan Clarkson acquired.
Yeah,
first round pick.
Yeah, it's it's a mess over in Cleveland. But so yeah, I mean maybe I'm sure.
Well, maybe you allow LeBron if this is what it is. Maybe you're dragging out this Colangelo thing so that you can fire him like a couple weeks. But then you're doing what Cleveland did last year and like going into a draft with no GM and but. Maybe if you send a floater out there to LeBron's people, like, hey, if LeBron wants a particular GM, you know, tell him to let us know.
Yeah.
And maybe that's one way to smooze him in the door. We know LeBron's really the GM. I mean, he built this horrendous team that he's playing with.
Maybe they signed him as both. You know, they signed him as player GM.
First player GM. I know you can't be player coach anymore, but who says you can't be player GM?
No rules. No rules. On that, Antoine Walker thinks that Boston is a good place for LeBron to go. Good fit, apparently.
He's probably not wrong, but I couldn't. After all these years of torment from this man and us tormenting him earlier in his career, and like I don't think I could flip it all around, and just I would be like a broken person.
I know that LeBron came. I know that the Celtics are not his like ultimate nemesis. It's probably either San Antonio or Golden State. Mm-hmm. But I wish that it'd be the Celtics. You know, it just it sucks that it didn't like align well enough, like during his like Heat years, that the Celtics were kind of in the rebuild. So,
well, one thing, if he did go to Philly or anywhere for that matter, we could potentially be his spoiler for like the third chapter of his career.
Yeah, you know?
And like we could play spoiler for that. Like,
but then
crazy,
we're also that's when it becomes the asterisk of like he's old now. Now he's age has gotten to him, and like it's no longer the actual narrative of like LeBron James the greatest player of all time, which he will have been kind of established by that point. But it'll be like the Jordan Wizard years. It'll be like, yeah, congrats.
But see, here's where I disagree with that, because he couldn't get over the hump in Cleveland and beat up the old guy Celtics. We went back to the finals in 2010. That was supposed to be his year. He couldn't get through us. He had to go build a super team to beat us, right? It would almost be like coming full circle back where it's like, he's the old guy now. We got the young kids, and we're going to beat the hell out of you. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, that, I mean, I can, I just think that he, it's going to be the asterisk once we get to that actually, you know, that point. If we do ever become his antagonists, whether he's in the Western Conference or mm-hmm. playing him in the finals, or he is on the Sixers, or I actually keep pitching the Hornets, because I think that'd be, hey, my friend is like, he needs to go somewhere, because my Sixers friend is like, he needs to go somewhere where there's already an established team and All-Stars. I'm like, oh man, then you'll love Charlotte, because they've got Kemba Walker and a young Michael Kidd-Gilchrist and the better Zeller and all these great pieces. It's so I think that'd be fun for him.
I can dig it. Hornets under Jordan's thumb,
and then he joins the ghosts that he's been chasing.
Yeah, mm-hmm. No. I like it.
I think that'd be the place for. I think that'd be a fun storyline, and then we get to really make. Firstly, the Hornets be relevant. Secondly, mm-hmm. we get to be the antagonist because Eastern Conference, and then there's more of a power structure in the East.
Yeah, then we've got a few good teams. Right. I can get behind that.
Yeah, all around. It'd be a fun conference for the next 6 years. And then we'll trample everybody.
Yes.
After that. Cool. Well, check out the links at the top of CelticsLife.com, where we have a huge variety of shirts and hoodies in our store. And you can even get tickets to the next game under that heading, which will probably be Summer League?
Yeah.
Vegas, yeah. Utah. Get on out there. Summer League. Let's go. And you can find this podcast on Blog Talk Radio, iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and most of your podcatcher apps. And as always, make sure you subscribe so that you don't miss any of our wonderful episodes where Mark and I debate about where LeBron James should go. And if you like what you hear, 5 stars would really help us out with just being seen by other basketball fans and Celtics podcast listeners, which will help us bring better content to you guys. If you want better content, let us know what you think we should work on with comments on any of our Celtics Life articles or on Twitter with the hashtag CLPod. Anything else you want to hit on, dude?
No. Happy finals, guys.
Happy finals. Go Celtics.
Go Celtics.